Hello and welcome to Science Unscripted. It's Connor here.
And Gabe.
And Gabe, you got to talk about what the heck is going on with your voice.
There was a holiday yesterday, public holiday yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish it was because I was out partying.
That's what it sounds like you were screaming or smoking.
I was in bed, sick. I got a kind of laryngitis type thing. Strep throat. That's it.
You have strep throat right now?
No, but it sounds like it.
Okay. So, yeah, for the rest of this part, Gabe is just going to sound...
I'm
going to
do my best.
Like that. He's going to do his best. I'm going to give your larynx a little break here and talk some of the science studies that we're going to talk about today. I've got three of them total.
Yeah.
I'm going to go from what I think is the most relevant for most people out there down to the least relevant.
All right, get them out of the way.
Let me get these out of the way. This one is pretty easy to understand. It's about what happens when you ask young women to stop using social media for 1 week.
It's probably very good for them.
It's very good for them. And specifically, it improves their perception of their own body.
Of course.
Right? Because you're not constantly forced to make comparisons between...
See how much better everyone else is doing it.
Yeah. Well, everyone who, for a variety of reasons, they're posting images, their best images of themselves. Sometimes they're digitally manipulating those images using filters or other tools to shrink the size of their hips or enlarge other parts. And it makes you feel bad. Mm. And so in this particular study, it was small. That's one caveat. It's a start and there should be more of them. It was done in the Toronto area and they took a total of 66 women, ages 17 to 24.
Mm-hmm.
And one caveat to this is they told them pretty explicitly what they were going to do. Look, you are going to take a break from social media and we're going to ask you later about your perception of your own body. And you are not going to take a break from social media. And later we're going to ask you about your perception of your own body.
Okay.
And so everyone knew going in.
All social media, every single.
Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and Twitter. So four. The biggest results, as I already said, was in terms of body image. So if you're in the group that didn't take a break from social media.
Kept on posting and reading posts. Yeah.
Yeah. If you rated yourself at the beginning of the week, you would have said I had roughly on the how happy am I with my body scale, I'm a 5 out of 9. From 1 to 9, I'm a 5. 1 week later, well, nothing about their lives has changed at all.
I'm assuming it's 5.
It's a 5, yeah. So you take the other group, it was a 5, and 1 week later, it had jumped up to a 6.
Wow.
Which is significant. They had other improvements in terms of social state, self-esteem, how good they feel about themselves going out in social situations. Across the board, this was basically a verification of a study from 2022. Lambert was the lead author on that one, where they established effectively the same thing. And I believe in that study, what was interesting is that it wasn't as true or even true at all with males. That one was more about Instagram. Mm-hmm. And when they had guys hop off Instagram, didn't really do much for them. Didn't improve. So
this advice is specifically for females out there, and especially young ones?
For young women, kind of late high school into college age. Take a break. Yeah. I mean, how much does this really help you? Because what was interesting is the group that said that they weren't going to go on social media still averaged, if I did the math right, about 3 hours that week. They couldn't help themselves. They had, even though they had app lockers.
Down from some other number, probably. Though.
Down from 30 was the other group. So they're still kind of barely using it. They can't help it. But the takeaway here is not just that you're going to be happier. I think more important, how would you establish this so that you can do it consistently over time and not get sucked back in? But it's a nice place to start, nice place to think about.
Okay, what else we got?
Okay, next one is another trend. Speaking of all these platforms, I don't know if you've come across it. I've seen it again and again and again and again over the last 2 years. This is ice baths or ice plunges.
I remember that. Yeah.
Like a hot tub but filled with ice.
Yeah, you these go online challenges that you have to do. And
yeah, and it's to the point that
celebrities start it and then everyone else imitates it and spreads through the...
Celebrities informed by whoever's advising them on health or sports topics. You have gym influencers, all these... And it spread, I was going to say like wildfire, but I need a metaphor that would be like ice.
Wild ice.
It spread like wild ice.
Yeah.
So in this particular meta study, they looked at 8 studies to try to figure out... It was specific to if you've done resistance training, weight training, or calisthenics, something to basically make your muscles burn, not cardio stuff.
Wait, freeze yourself after working out?
A lot of people do. Gabe, do you remember? Sorry, we got back in the corona time.
Yeah.
We got a little bit into this YouTube guy who calls himself Athlean.
Athlean X?
Yeah. Do you remember him?
Oh, man. Yeah.
He had a video that was, the title was like, if you don't take a cold shower after pumping, you will lose all of your gains.
Oh, no.
Right?
I forget that
And
one,
I remember looking at that, and that was a moment. I'm serious, because I had sort of trusted him on most things. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I thought, I'm not sure that's true.
This phenomenon has been looked into? Or?
This is what they've looked into.
What did they find?
Yeah, what they found is basically the ice bath, if anything, will attenuate or reduce the muscle growth that would normally happen after hypertrophy, or that feeling you have when you've burned your muscles up and they're kind of throbbing, pulsating, and they're going to grow the next day.
Okay.
That the vasoconstriction that happens, so basically the ability of blood to flow through your body, gets changed by the ice cold waters, and hence the repairing effects and the muscular growth that would happen as a result, or that would normally happen if you didn't hop in the ice water, that slows it down.
Okay.
And that it's not, basically, if you want to get big and strong and have big muscles, this is not what you should be doing. If you have inflammation, this could be cellular injury, this could be an actual injury, an irritant, you could have pathogens in your body.
Ice it.
Correct. Yeah. So it's not
that brings on the inflammation.
Yeah. So they were looking at something very specific. If you're lifting weights or you want your muscles to get bigger, an ice bath or ice shower is not the way to do that.
That's good news.
Yeah. Not if you've bought one of these really expensive
cold tubs.
Well,
now you can stop doing it because it's probably very painful.
Yeah. And by the way, if you're looking for this one, unfortunately, I don't have the title of the paper, but it's from the Department of Exercise Science and Recreation, specifically the Applied Muscle Development Lab at CUNY. That's the Lehman College in New York.
I got one. What's a song that you like that's very sad?
The one that comes to mind first, which I guess has to be the most accurate then, is a song by a band called Weezer. And that band was popular growing up. And they had a song on one of their albums called Butterfly. And I mean, let me just
Butterfly.
Get to you. Yeah, so Butterfly, he goes outside with a mason jar, captures a butterfly, presumably puts the lid inside, wakes up, and it's dead. And he's like,
kills the butterfly.
No more sighing.
Can you hear that? Can you hear that song in your head right now?
Oh, I know every single lyric.
Can you imagine? And you really like it? You like that feeling of listening to that song?
The butterfly is a metaphor for.
Do you like the feeling of listening to the song?
Yes, I like it. Makes me sad.
Imagine listening to it and not feeling the sadness.
Then I would be lacking.
Do you still like it?
Oh.
Do you still like the song if you take the sadness or the feeling of sadness away from listening to that song?
So if the lyrics are changed and instead of being about...
It has nothing to do with the lyrics. Just imagine that the feeling of sadness is gone.
Do I like it? No, not as much. There's something about the sadness that makes it deep.
Yeah. I'm going to play you... It's an important part that you select the song. I'm going to play you a song that I think is very sad, or music that I think is very sad. Right now, our boy Thomas Schmidt, the guy who...
Okay, so she's mourning the death of whom, is my question.
Aeneas. We're going back to college now, to the Aeneid. Virgil wrote a poem about the founder of Rome, who had the duty to save the Trojans. He was one of the ones that had survived the Trojan War. And he went from Troy up. He was supposed to found a new place in Italy, Rome, and so he had this sense of duty. On the way, in Carthage, he meets a woman named Dido, and they fall in love, like one of the most famous love stories in all of literature. He leaves her because of his duty to set up Rome, to found Rome. She kills herself. That song right there is...
Before she does it.
Yeah, well, because Aeneas left her on his way to Italy.
Well, he had a job to do.
He had a job. And fate was more important to him than Dido, even though he loved her too. She was so,
distraught.
Absolutely.
So this is your sad song. It makes you feel feelings of sadness.
Yeah. There was a study done on why we like sad music, why human beings love sad music. And they wanted to take the intermediary out of it. Because the argument is that listening to sad music has this cathartic effect. We're moved via the sadness. Therefore, we like it, i.e. we don't like it because of the sadness, because it's illogical. It doesn't make sense to want to be sad. Sadness is a negative emotion. The people down in Australia who conducted this study, their premise or their idea was that it is the sadness itself that we want to feel.
Yeah.
So they were looking for a way to do this. And that's why I asked you to try and do this weird self-introspection and take the sadness out of the song. Do you still like it? They did that with two groups. So there was a group that selected their own piece of music, and they were either supposed to focus on being moved by the music or being sad. Like focusing on the actual emotion of sadness. The ones who were told to take the sadness out no longer liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that were asked to take being moved out of it still liked it. The methodology is a weird one on this, but it's a hard, because it's such a subjective thing to study. They wanted to try.
Wait a minute. Oh, so if you take the sadness out, you're not going to like it anymore.
Because it's the sadness that you like.
If it moves you and you take out the fact that it moves you.
Yeah. You could be focusing on positive emotions, not necessarily sadness.
If you take the moved part out, then
you still like the music.
It is the fact that it's sad.
There are limitations to the study. First of all, it was only 100 college kids. That's not at all representative. And also, like I said, the methodology here is, it's not flawed. It's just a little weird.
It's complex.
Yeah.
So we human beings.
How do you imagine a song without a feeling of sadness?
But the takeaway is that we intentionally seek out sad music sometimes for that dose of sadness.
Because we like that feeling.
We want to
We want to feel sad. And when I listen to Dido lamenting she's about to commit suicide, I want to feel that sadness.
Now, if people ask you, why do you listen to sad music, you can say it's because I want to be sad. And guess what? That's an objective truth, or at least based on 100 college kids down in Australia.
Yeah.
We've been talking a lot about music on the show. One last update, an email from Chris. And we were talking about how, going back to this study from Austria, on how music has changed over time, the lyrics have become simpler. Huh? So we had a really good point that had not occurred to me, had not occurred to you or our expert. From Chris, he said, look, just an observation. Your guest touched briefly on the way music is produced. Decades ago, a group of musicians would have to go into a studio and work out songs. This process was long and gave the individual musicians time to think about what they were doing. Fast forward to today, and songs can be crafted by a single individual with no input from the individual musicians other than the samples the producer selects. I personally don't think music is getting quote-unquote dumber, but the way it is being produced is changing significantly. I just thought that was a really good point.
Yeah, less editing, and editing from people around you.
Buddies. What I wrote back to him, I emailed him back and said, to me it feels like it's the opposite of the too many cooks problem. You have too few cooks. You can make music now as a single cook with no input from anyone.
Even if you don't really know how to cook?
Even if you don't know how to cook. And it might end up going out there. And sometimes we all need people to be like, hey, that thing you just created
sucked.
Last point here, and this is science that really will have no effect on any of you. We try to connect a lot of our science to you, our listeners out there. And this one, it just kind of tickled my funny bone.
Okay.
And so I'm gonna dump it here at the end. Humans are going back to the moon. There is a problem. Whether you're on the moon or in microgravity situations or in zero gravity, which is that human beings lose bone density. The official rate is that for every month in space, I'm reading this here, astronauts' weight-bearing bones become roughly 1% less dense if they don't take precautions to counter this loss. That's why on the space station you see the astronauts up there, they're running on the treadmill, they're trying to figure this out. So one theory that I always see, or image or video, is this von Braun wheel, or the idea of like a rotating wheel in space that's going around and it creates gravity. If you've ever been on the gravitron is what it was called at the circus or at the fair.
Love that.
It pins you to the wall.
Took my kids there to the Dodge County Fair. They had a gravitron.
It's amazing.
You go up and
it sticks you to the wall by creating gravity by spinning around.
Yes.
That's really expensive, really difficult to create in space. And Italian researchers might have come up with a way easier solution. Have you ever seen, so we're going to stick with the circus, what was called the Wall of Death? Do you know what I'm talking about there?
No.
Okay. It's a circular ring-shaped thing, and then guys on a motorcycle, it was usually guys, start going around and around and around, and their acceleration and their speed would take them up the sides of the walls, and they'd be on the motorcycle. Their bodies would be sideways to the ground.
Cool.
In Italy, they took a wall of death, popped the top off it, put a crane over it and some rubber straps going down, and harnessed two people in. These were two Italians, they were both in their 30s, a guy and a woman. And they recreated lunar gravity, which is 1/6 of our Earth gravity.
Sure.
And they started running around.
And the idea would be to, when we've settled the moon, to create this wall of death-esque.
Yes, it doesn't have to spin.
Contraption.
You just have to build it once. It has to sit there.
And then you can strap that thing on and run.
You don't have to strap, because there you already have 1/6 gravity.
Oh, yeah, of course. You just need to run. Earth.
Yeah, so then you start, and there's a little ramp going up to the wall. It's more like a bowl. And at this point, the limiting factor, they're trying to figure out, okay, can you do it long enough? Because you need some speed. How long can you continue to hold that pace going around? Is it enough to really keep the bones from losing their density? But I just thought that was fun. It increases our chances of having healthy people on lunar bases. I love that.
Excellent. Before we go, I'm going to read an email that we got from Paul, and it's going to lead us into the music that will take us out of this show. It's going to be that Dido's Lament, but played by a saxophone. This is Paul. More than any other time in history, this is in reference to the wisdom talk that was played last week. More than any other time in history, mankind faces a crossroads. One path leads to despair and utter hopelessness. The other to total extinction. Let us pray we have the wisdom to choose correctly.
Wow. Yeah.
Quoting Woody Allen, by the way.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a controversial source. That reminded me of a final email here from Anastasia, who says, I love your show. That's how she signed it off. And she said, here's my simple take on it. The opposite of foolishness is wisdom. But I like that, Anastasia. I also like foolishness as well.
Can we just let the saxophone play?
We can let the saxophone play. Real quick, though. What have we learned? Because there's been a lot of science and a lot of emails.
I forgot.
Take a break, a 1 week break or more from social media.
Yeah.
That's very important. Ice baths, they're good for reducing inflammation.
Yeah.
Not if you're trying to build muscle mass.
We like music that is sad because we want to feel sadness. And again, the saxophone is coming in a second here, guys.
And what? If you want to keep your bones and your muscles strong on the moon, which who doesn't? Create the wall of death on the moon and run around it. Email us, su@dw.com. Gabe is back there holding a basketball hoop. I have a tennis ball in my hand. Doesn't really make sense, but it was the only ball I could find to demonstrate a basketball free throw, which if you've been fouled on the court while shooting, you get two shots. And so the first shot, you're going to try to make it. And here I'm probably not going to make it.
Nice shot.
Nice almost try. Almost broke our lava lamp. So I just missed the first shot. And that means the odds actually go up that I'm going to miss the second shot as well. And that's not good, because the more these shots you make, the more likely it is that you're going to win the game and maybe win the championship, be champions of the universe. So the question is, what could possibly happen right now so that the odds go up that I'm going to make this shot without Gabe cheating? I'm not going to cheat either. What sort of intervention could change the outcome? We're going to find that out together with researcher Christiane Büttner from Basel, Switzerland.
Science Unscripted.
Hi, my name is Christiane Büttner. I'm a researcher at the University of Basel in Switzerland. I'm a social psychologist, and I just published a study on free throw performance in basketball and how touch might help there.
So what was the conclusion? If you're shooting a free throw in basketball, What has to happen to make it work better?
If you're shooting a free throw in basketball and you just missed, so you get two free throws and you missed the first one, it really helps if your teammates come in and touch your shoulders or your back to support you.
How much does it help?
It helps significantly so. So if you miss the first throw and your teammates then touch you, then you're more likely to make the second free throw compared to when they didn't touch your shoulders or back to support you. Especially between not being touched at all and the first free throw, there's a huge jump in your probability to make it.
And how did you analyze this, or how did you come to this conclusion?
We watched 60 basketball games from the College Women's Association and then coded for each throw whether in between the two throws the other players touched the shooting player.
Okay,
so I watched a lot of basketball.
Yeah, so you wait
a lot of free throws.
Wait until somebody's fouled, yeah. They go to the free throw line, they're shooting free throws, they have to miss the first free throw, and then you're looking at that video footage to see, did someone walk up and like, hey, it's okay, you're gonna do better next time.
Was the touch that long?
Exactly.
Or is it just one little touch? Or?
No, it's just, usually it's one little touch. Usually the two players who play the defense, they just slap the hand. But then sometimes the other players who are out on the field come in and also touch the player, usually their shoulder or back.
Was I right when I was looking at your study that it seemed like there was a clear increase in performance based on how many times that person was touched? So like one touch is okay, but three touches is better, and five touches. This guy's ready to, I'm gonna keep on touching.
Can you?
This guy. But right?
It goes, I knew this was gonna happen. Yes.
It goes up more and more. Like it seems like,
yeah,
there was no upper limit possibly to how much
so
better you
the
can.
Upper limit is that there's only four other players on the field, so you can only be touched four times. And we would have been so interested in seeing, does it also help when, I don't know, the coach comes in, but they don't do that. I'm not even sure they're allowed on the field. So there's the upper limit of it can only be four other players. And it really only works when you miss the first free throw. And we interpreted this in a way that when you miss the first throw, your stress level is even higher. And what that social support does is lower your stress level. And that then helps you to execute the motor skills to make the free throw.
Did you end up landing on the basketball free throw because it's difficult to find anything else like it? When I first saw your study, I was thinking, wow, this has applications, or you can definitely extrapolate to other sports. But there aren't too many situations like that in sports, are there? Or are there other examples where there's an attempt to do something, you're standing all alone as a sports athlete, and then you either do it or fail, and then your teammates can come up and give you support? Are there other situations like that?
So a lot of people have said that volleyball, they huddle, and it's extensive. Like, they group hug after every point they make. So that would be another case. I can imagine that it would work in double in tennis. That you acknowledge each other through touch. And then someone recently said something that I found really nice. Usually you pat someone on the back when they did something all right or good yet, already, but maybe it would be more helpful to do it before. And that then applies to many other situations. Like, imagine Gabe is really, really stressed about the recording. And then you just pat him on the shoulder a bit. Might help to take some of the stress off and might make him a better moderator.
Guess what's going to happen?
Can we practice?
My stress levels would
Let's imagine.
Really...
Let's imagine we're about to go and interview this really scary, intimidating researcher from Basel, Switzerland named Christiana Büttner.
I'd be shaking
in my boots.
And then I place them in and say, you're going to be kind of like, you're going to be fine, right? And then the idea would be you do the same to me.
And then
there we go. Now
we don't miss the interview or
We're calm. No matter, I think in addition to the positive effects of touch, right, it's also the distraction. If I'm having anxious thoughts, God, I missed it. And now I hope I don't miss it. But if I miss the first one, I'm probably going to miss the second one. What was my form off? Do I need to follow through more? Then at the very least, a quick couple taps is possibly also just distracting me from that negative cycle, I guess.
Yeah, that could very well be. We didn't measure like cognitive distortions or thoughts or hormone levels. So we don't know. We just observe real plays, like real games. Mm. But it could be very well be that there's other studies showing that your cortisol levels, so stress hormones, go actually down when someone touches you. So that could be, could also help you to bring yourself more in the moment, and that should help with free throw performance.
And for people watching or listening to this right now, that's all it would take is a pat on the back before they do some activity that they're nervous about that's going to help them psychologically?
That's what we see in the data. Like bringing up free throw performance in basketball is one of the number one objectives of coaches, because it's the only thing that you can really, really influence, right? That's something you can train a lot and then you get better. But there's a plateau. Like in college basketball for women, I think it's 80%. Most players don't get better than that. So if that pat even gets you like 3%, that's totally worth it, because that point could decide the game, and they often do.
And in the greatest sport of all, life.
Golf.
No, well, life. Yeah, golf is up there with life.
Well, the caddy could help. I mean, can you imagine?
No, yeah. I mean, obviously, again, extrapolating or speculating, but if someone I know is about to do something and I can see it's stressing them out, it's an individual performance of some kind. It could be a speech that they have to give. It could be a podium discussion they have to moderate. It could be anything that your research would suggest that I could help de-stress them slightly, not even with words, because not all of us are good with words, especially at those moments, finding the right ones, but just with a little reassuring touch on the shoulder.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Science Unscripted.
And that was Christiane Büttner talking to us from Basel, Switzerland, about basketball and answering, I didn't really have a chance to say this during the interview, answering a question that I have had for years. I played basketball, but my question was not about basketball. It's soccer, which I also played. And in soccer, actually all sports, if something goes wrong, there are teams that are like, hey, especially here in Germany, hey, what's all that? Yeah, they're yelling at each other. You can see the social the psychology of the team cracking and fracturing and breaking apart. There are other teams that not only don't do that, they're walking around and doing the little high five slaps and getting and actually physically getting together even. Mm. Mm. And I've always wondered, I've always thought that has to have an effect. It seems like, based on this research from Christiane Büttner, that it would.
Golf, momentum, right? When you double bogey a hole, the way you bounce back, that defines you as a golfer. If only I had known before I failed at my attempt to go professional in golf, that all I needed was a caddy to come and caress me or touch me. After every bad shot.
Like, although if it's too much, maybe it's an inverted U curve.
No,
sort
but
of thing.
The important stuff here is that Christiane said that this can affect everyone, and not only sports. If you've got anything that you're worried about that would cause your cortisol levels to go up.
Yeah, but then you need someone to touch you, and who's going to do
well,
that?
Well, that's the tip. So you go and get someone to touch you.
Do you hire them? I mean, hopefully you have friends.
I don't care how you do it. You find somebody to give you some support.
$20 an hour. I need you to calmly tap my shoulder. The other way of looking at it is from the other direction. Is somebody you care about, or even don't care about that much? Are they obviously stressed out?
There you go. Yeah.
And is it a situation where it is appropriate to give a reassuring touch? Think about it. This you can actually help them, and it's pretty simple and only takes a couple seconds.
Science Unscripted.
DW, made for minds.